Hey there, it's your happy Asian woman host, Alice Chen. Do you know any teens who are feeling overwhelmed with the college admissions process? If so, send them my way. I run Bright Story Admission Consulting, a boutique company that focuses on college application essays. A little about me. I'm a Stanford grad, a professional journalist, and I also coach other essay coaches. I love teaching people how to write, and I'm so thrilled when my students get into schools that they love, like Stanford, MIT, and the UCs. Learn more about my company at brightstory.info. Welcome to Happy Asian Woman, a show to help Asian American women find more joy in love, work, and life. I'm your host, Alice Chen. Thanks for joining us. If you missed part one, listen in as CNBC anchor John Fort shares about everything from how his parents encouraged him to draw Black superheroes to how we can talk about sensitive racial issues. Let's listen in on part two.
Yeah, I think we're all looking for an ism, right? Like there's been that saying that's out there, well, you know, babies, no child starts off racist. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's true. Mm. I think that just in our nature, once there's competition for a resource, we in our fallen nature just look for any reason why our group gets it and that group doesn't. Mm-hmm. And whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's somebody shorter or taller than we are, whether they're eating a food that we think smells funny, whatever it is, we're going to figure out a reason why we should get better than they should get. Unless we talk about it, we're aware of it, we guard against it, and we create a culture of more openness and respect that counteracts that. And so I think that's why it's important to teach about difference and then eventually about racism. You talk about not scaring kids. You know, I don't show them these videos of negative police interaction because I think that skews the picture too much. You know, I've had a decent number of police interactions in my life, and 90%+ of them have been great. Right. At the same time, growing up, it was talked about and well known in the Black community that you need to be careful and behave in these certain ways if you get pulled over by a police officer. Now the rest of the world, I think, is more shocked by these cell phone videos that we're seeing. But it was sort of well known within the community that this was a cultural factor that we had to guard against. I knew that and understood that without having to see these traumatic images to get it. So, you know, with the ages that that our boys are, you know, 10 and 12, they're not at the point where they need to, you know, they're driving and they need to see or understand every level of challenge and danger that's out there. Try to keep it age appropriate for what they need to know right now, or else, I mean, they'll be terrified.
Right. So it sounds like controlling information a little bit. Well, age appropriate information, basically.
Yeah, I view it as the same thing you would do in school, right? You're not going to try to teach calculus to a third grader because then they're going to be scared of math. Right?
That's so true. Good point. I know. I feel like I struggle with a lot of all or nothing, but there's a lot of nuance to these things. And is that the same thing with like the stereotyping thing? It's like you, because I think even in your course, there were so many different types of thinkers and so many different perspectives. You would present the information and allow them to have it, but then you would discuss it and through your own modeling, like the stereotype of don't do well in school, but you yourself did well in school. And so I think it's okay to show them these sort of stereotypes exist, but through modeling and discussion, that's how you prevent them from falling into the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, in the course, it was so interesting. So the group of 11 total kids, our boys being two of them, that we pulled together, it was important to me that they all be Black. Now, there was lots of diverse cultural background within the Blackness. I think probably like a third of the kids were both Black and Asian American, whether it's you know, Taiwanese, Korean, Japanese, right? There's a girl who's Black and Japanese, who's the daughter of my friends from college. And then there was a brother and sister who were Black and Chinese American, the son and daughter of a coworker, and, you know, our boys. So it's like out of 11, almost half. So there was an interesting amount of mix in cultural background, but for what educators often call identity safety, it was important to me that they all be coming from this needing to understand the Black experience for a directly personal reason. And, you know, when I was in elementary school in particular, also junior high, the fact that I was in these majority Black environments in these honors or gifted and talented classes, I think had a big influence on my identity and self-concept. Because if I hadn't had that experience, I might have bought into this kind of overall societal idea, lie, that Black students can't perform at a certain level. But hey, I mean, I can look in kids who I was in elementary school classes with, or doctors and, you know, lawyers and entrepreneurs doing great. Like we moved in circles with kids whose families shared the same values and cultural values. So we weren't overwhelmed by this kind of external message of underachievement. So I think that was important and is important to, I mean, you can't control every interaction of kids, but you can set certain conditions, right? You can't control who their friends are, but you can control more who your friends are. And then often your friends' kids have a likelihood of being friends with your kids. So, you know, maybe put yourself in some diverse environments and be welcoming, not just for your individual sake, but for the sake of the cultural openness that you're trying to model.
That's so fascinating. Those are such great ideas, because oftentimes I think of education like book education, like what books, what resources, and that type of thing. But I think the overall, the lifestyle, the modeling, that integration is so important. So
it's not only important, I think it's in some ways more important.
Right, for sure.
Because if you talk about the importance of difference and appreciating other cultures, but then you don't do it, it becomes a Santa Claus situation. It's like, well, this was a fun myth maybe for you to play with, but over time, as I grow up, I learned that it might be a fun idea, but it doesn't practically work for you. So maybe it shouldn't practically work for me.
So basically examining our own lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is sort of a similar question, but how do you maintain hope in your own life? Like for me personally, what happened on the Capitol, what's been happening these past 4 years has been at times very stressful and overwhelming for me. So how do you personally cope?
Well, I work. No, and when I say I work, I mean, this course really came out of that need to have hope. Right. For a couple of days, I mean, it was closing in on me, right? Not only the fact that George Floyd had been killed, but the influx of attention that I was getting from non-Black friends and coworkers and et cetera, wanting my reaction, wanting my really kind of absolution in a lot of cases. People, I think, were wanting some affirmation that they were a good person. So they were reaching out to their Black friend so that, and this isn't to vilify people, but they were reaching out to their Black friends so that they could feel that I have a Black friend. I reached out to him and I checked on him. And so I'm good. Right. and now I can tell people that I reached out to my Black friend too. And, you know, and if they don't have a Black friend, then they'll feel bad. But if they do, then maybe, and we'll see how deep the conversation was. Where do they know them from? But you know, I wrote a poem first that I actually didn't share, but my wife did, that got some reaction around it. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, my attention really turned to our boys. And because there were a lot of people out protesting, marching. As a journalist, I can't do that. I can't do, you know, take those public political stances. But I thought, well, what can I do? I can do what journalists do. I can research, I can explain, I can engage, I can create environments for debate and learning. Mm-hmm. And you know, as these events continue to swirl and develop, I continue to work on the course. You know, it's more than a download now. There's an online interactive experience that I've built out. And there are two lessons now live, $5 each. And you can go through and experience the resources that I taught at the time. It's not just for kids. As a matter of fact, it's adults going through it now. And I encourage adults to go through it with their kids, maybe 10, 11 and up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mirror it onto your Apple TV or your smart TV and go through and talk about things as they're happening. And so it's become a company with a purpose to be able to have the resources to support the outreach, the education, the dialogue, and that that cross-cultural understanding that I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I love that. That's such a great idea. I think because I've seen a therapist and she has said, like, in the face of trauma, to prevent PTSD, basically take action. And you have to let people know that there are things that they can do. And the more control and the action that we can take, I think the less traumatic things can be. So I love the fact that you took all of this emotion. Like, I was personally overwhelmed with emotion. I felt like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? Like, it's hard for me to function. I was like, what do I do? What do I do? And then I'm happy we're having this conversation now. And yeah, it's awesome to see what you've done. Also, a lot of the people in the course, the things that they've done. I think that that's such an inspiration that in the face of injustice and hopelessness, we can still try to make a difference.
Yeah. And it's been so exciting and gratifying to hear, not just from the young people who went through the course and their parents on their kind of new engagement and openness about race and society and things that are happening, but the fact that they're not frightened by it, they're engaged in it and they're creating connections. And they understand how far we've come and the ideas that point to where we could go from here. And now, you know, while at first the material was focused on teaching Black kids, now I've got friends from high school, from college, who are going through the material, really enjoying it, bringing their kids through it. And I'm hearing that feedback about what they're learning. And that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I mean, we're sort of talking about this question of why did you create the course? How did you do it? What do you hope will happen with the course, and how are you trying to make that happen? And we sort of talked about the why, but how did you do it? What do you hope will happen, and what are you doing to make that happen?
Well, I'm a little nuts. How did I do this? I never done anything exactly like this before. I mean, I'm sort of a longtime Sunday school teacher. So teaching isn't new to me. I was a camp counselor as a kid, always loved kids and interacting with kids. So I had some background in preparing lessons for kids and engaging them. But my first step, you know, I told some friends who I had been getting on a Google Meet call with every week, some Black alumni from DePauw, from the college I went to. I said, in the week or so after George Floyd was killed, you know, I want to make a course. A couple of people said, oh, well, you know, somebody's probably done that before. You should look and see what's out there before, you know, thinking you need to start something from scratch. I thought, okay, well, you know, you're right. So I'll look. And I looked, and what I found was largely Black history materials that focused on slavery and the civil rights movement. And it was kind of like little preamble to, there were some people in Africa and there were a couple civilizations, then slavery. And let's go really deep into slavery and how horrible that was. Mm-hmm. And then there was a civil war and things didn't quite go right after that. And then civil rights movement, and boy, there were these heroes and wasn't it wonderful. And then today, mm-hmm. and it was almost like, weren't there other things that happened in there? Aren't there other mm-hmm. things that are important for kids to connect to? I didn't want it to just be mm-hmm. about trauma mm-hmm. and hero worship. Right. Mm-hmm. Because neither one is entirely accurate. And so once I saw what was out there and saw, well, that isn't really what I want, I thought, what's the framing that I think would make sense for this? In the first part of whatever this is, I need to be able to connect to the kids somehow. What's the idea that I can use to connect to them? Because a lot of kids these days, they don't even think about racism as being a thing. Right. Like until they're really confronted with it, mm-hmm. they don't even think of race as being important. And that's mm-hmm. kind of nice in a way, mm-hmm. but until the moment when you need to talk about it with them. So I thought, okay, how do I make this relevant? I thought about the idea from W.E.B. Du Bois of double consciousness, mm-hmm. where it's difficult to be both Black and American because of the environment we're in and discrimination. I thought, well, even though the worldview that I have is different from the one that my kids are going to have, in the same way that the worldview that my mom had growing up in the mm-hmm. segregated South is different mm-hmm. from the worldview that I had growing up in DC and going to high school in suburban Maryland. You know, she was afraid that I'd be lynched if I was seen walking around with a white girl, where I was like, Mom, it's the 90s. Right? Neither one of us was entirely right. Neither one of us was entirely wrong. But even though our worldviews are going to be different between generations, this idea of tension in identity lives on. And I think for my kids, they were feeling it a little bit more from other Black kids who maybe thought, well, why aren't you acting like this? Mm-hmm. Or why aren't you, you know, doing that, versus feeling it from the broader society? But it was still a connection point. So the first cycle, double consciousness, we talk about that from a lot of different angles. Gender, we talk about themes in Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. We don't get into the kind of nitty-gritty mature themes in that book. But the idea of white beauty standards and mm-hmm. identity. And, you know, we also talk about potential and how one's talent and potential sometimes can't be seen based on who you are. And I use Othello mm-hmm. in that, and teach them a little bit about Shakespeare at the same time. So that was the first part. The second part goes into history, called How We Got Here. It goes from ancient African civilizations mm-hmm. right up to the Civil War, showing that there really were thriving, vibrant civilizations, even though we don't have record of them in the same way that we do of some others. And we go into some archaeological record and things like that. And then the third cycle is called False Restarts. And that was really born of the George Floyd moment, when I was hearing from some people, oh, well, everything's going to be different now, right? Because look, people are marching and everybody says there are going to be these changes. So isn't it really different this time? And I was thinking, no, not really. We have this pattern in American history where there are these cataclysmic moments and the opportunity for enormous change. We take three steps forward and we take two steps back. Mm-hmm. We had the Civil War and emancipation, and then we had failed Reconstruction and the black codes that led to Jim Crow, right? So there was this opportunity and a step back. We had the Civil Rights Movement, and then we had integration that didn't entirely go the way it was supposed to. School busing, resegregate, you know, failed policies. So I figured, let's in this false restart cycle talk about that, outline it, show how it worked, and show that while progress was made, it wasn't as much progress as was hoped for at the moment. And while that isn't ideal, that's okay. Don't let that crush your hope. We're still moving forward, just perhaps not as quickly as we might have hoped. Mm-hmm.
So what do you hope will happen with the course, and how are you trying to make that happen? What's your dream for the course?
Well, my dream is for it to provide people with a lot of truth and ideas and points of connection, both for themselves individually and with others. It's really to connect the Black experience and the American experience, and introduce some concepts that I think are relevant to all kinds of different ethnic and cultural groups, both here and abroad. So right now, I'm working with a charter school network on preparing teachers to teach cycle three to eighth graders in the coming months.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
That's awesome.
I'm working with a college. I'll leave it vague for now until there are official announcements. So I'm working with a college on using it in a campus-wide cultural race and culture exploration. And I'm working with at least one company in making the materials available both to employees and to college students. And so this I can also say, I'm working with the Prindle Institute for Ethics at DePauw University on making these materials available to schools free of charge.
Wow.
So the goal is to allow companies to sponsor access to the materials and to teacher training that I'm developing, so that teachers are able to access this and then bring it to the classroom. And so the money would go to the Prindle Institute for Ethics, and they would grant it to the schools for use in the course as they see fit. So if you're interested in your company having that kind of access, once again, 55444, but text the word course to that. Text the word teach, T-E-A-C-H, to 55444, and I'll get your name and an email address. And as soon as we have the formal process down with the Prindle Institute for Ethics, where companies can partner to make this material available to schools, we'll let you know.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Do you have any tips for someone who might want to create a similar course, say for the Asian experience or for another experience? I think your course was so inspiring that, like, if someone wanted to help their own children, what would you recommend?
Well, thank you, first of all. I think the challenge in the Asian American experience is just how diverse it is, right? Because you're talking, I mean, Asia's huge. Right. So you're talking about South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, it's just such an immense collection of cultures. I think something that we've started to watch that I think is going to be an amazing thing to dive into is this special that's out there called Asian Americans, Asian Americans. And it's an exploration of different Asian immigrant groups to the US and what their experiences were over time. And I think just being able to watch that and then have family conversations around it would be pretty amazing. I mentioned to you before we had this conversation for the podcast that our family went on vacation to Korea in 2019, it must have been. Really fortunate that we were able to do that when we were. And I think that trip and not just seeing the country and visiting some landmarks, the DMZ, my wife's family's ancestral home on father's side, and being able to see pictures and cultural artifacts and all of that, but also be embraced by family in a different country. All of that opened up educational conversations and curiosity. And I think being able to do that in a way that, yes, is about your kids and your family, but also opens up parallels to friends and the broader community and what their experience has been. All of that, I think, is a powerful way, maybe not necessarily to do a formal course,
right,
in the same way that I've done here, but to have a process and an ongoing exploration that you're doing as a family, and opening up a conversation about these things that continues and continues.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. That was one of my questions, was how do you and your wife teach your boys about the Korean side of their racial identity? Any other things besides sort of what we've touched on, the trip, conversations, the traditions, any other things? There's no equivalent, I'm assuming, for the course. It was probably the trip to Korea or something like that, but...
Yeah, I mean, not yet.
That's your next project, John.
that one would be far harder for me. I don't know how long it might take me to be even remotely qualified to put that together. But I am very curious about so much of my wife's family's background and understanding Korean culture, Korean history, the different interactions with Japan and China and whatnot. All of that, the economic history of the peninsula also, and how that continues to play out and what we see happening today. I think being a lifelong learner, you know, and modeling that is important, and these things become extra interesting to the kids when they see us having our own questions and not just mm-hmm. answers, and mm-hmm. diving into things and being surprised and interested.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So how have you personally changed after creating and teaching this course on the Black experience?
Well, you know, I don't think I'm far enough away from it yet. Uh-huh. To have the greatest perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think what surprised me about it is how the mission behind it has continued to carry it forward. When I started this, I didn't intend to create a downloadable resource, you know, designed resource that I was going to sell, or to create interactive lessons that would be the basis of a company. I just wanted to try to make something for my kids. Mm-hmm. And when some friends and colleagues heard about it, they said, can our kids come too? And I said, sure, we'll see if it works. And then I thought, well, if this works, if I actually pull this off, it'd be a good idea to share it even more broadly. Yeah. So first, let's see if I can pull it off, and then we'll go from there. And so it's just been step by step. Mm-hmm. So it's changed my sense of myself as a creator of content and materials and ideas. It's gotten me to the point where I'm starting to get comfortable calling myself an entrepreneur. I'm used to interviewing entrepreneurs, not being one, but I can... Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely happening. The story's still being told. I don't have the greatest perspective yet on exactly how it's changed me.
Those are some good first steps. I think having gone through the course, I was like, I read through a lot of the lessons, all of the lessons, and I looked at the questions, and they were so great. Like, there was clearly so much thought. It's a really deep course, like a lot of thought went into it. It felt like a college level course.
I didn't mention I'm working on turning it into a college level course.
It also is, for sure. Like a grad level course. It's so deep. And there's a lot for adults. I felt like I learned so much. Like, it blew my mind hearing all these things and thinking about the questions you asked.
So I got a really good piece of advice about 3-4 years ago. I interviewed the musician and producer Q-Tip from A Tribe Called Quest. And we were talking about the show that he does on Beats One, you know, on Apple Music. And he was talking about how much work it is to put together this music every week. And, you know, he's got to scour and be familiar with the latest stuff as well as old stuff. And you know, I was asking, well, why do you do it? Like, it's so much work. Why? And he said, you got to do work that makes you do work. Mm. Like this this was important for me to do because it forces me to do what I really need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, huh, that's there's a lot in that. And it kind of spoke to some of the things that I was doing at CNBC around the Fort Knox digital show and why that was important for me to do. And I think it speaks to this too, if the core idea behind a project that you're working on is really connected to who you are, mm-hmm. and what's important to you, then you know, try to structure it in a way where you're doing work that makes you do work. Like it makes you deeper, more curious, more analytical, better read in the areas where you want to be and need to be. So I think this thing has certainly helped me along those lines and continues to.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was like, how the heck did you put this together? Just the variety of sources, the types of questions. I was like, how do you even do this? It was really mind blowing.
Pressure. It was pressure. It's because I started it. I structured the first six lessons and had them pretty much all written out and the resources written out. And then I realized I'm going to have to start teaching this and understanding how the kids are interacting with it before I can do the rest. So I stopped. I had the general concept, but I didn't know exactly what each lesson was going to be and what all the resources were going to be. And sure enough, after I got into the first two lessons, I realized, I constructed this to be at the high school or college level, and I'm teaching it to 10 to 13 year olds. But my teaching style, you know, even as a Sunday school teacher, my approach was always teach them the Bible. Like, don't teach them some sanitized, you know, picture book version. We can talk about it at their level, but teach them the actual thing. So that was my approach here too, is I'm going to show them footage of Malcolm X speeches and then, you know, talk about that. And we'll look at Eyes on the Prize, which is a great video that came out in the mid to late 80s, documenting the civil rights movement from people who lived it. That's now available on Amazon Prime. But, you know, we went through these materials, and then with younger kids, you got to pause more and get more interaction and clarify some vocabulary sometimes, but they can handle it, you know? So yeah, it was really great.
It's really profound. I could tell that you're a deep thinker by having gone through the course. I was really impressed. So anything else you want to tell our listeners or anything else you thought I should have asked?
No, I mean, I think your questions, of course, were great. I just encourage everyone, whenever I talk about diversity, diversity means everybody. So no matter what your family's country or culture of origin, there's no one group of people that has sort of a monopoly on the kind of understanding that we need to develop. So whether it is the school communities or neighborhood communities that you're a part of, the churches or other neighborhood groups that you're a part of, I would just encourage everyone to widen your social circles and social interactions to the level of your ideals, right? I think that's a consistent challenge for all of us. We have comfort zones, and you know, for me in high school, at one point my comfort zone was in multicultural communities. I only really feel comfortable when everybody around me has a different shade and there's lots of languages being spoken. So I went to college in the rural Midwest, and that got me out of my comfort zone. But I needed that, right? And I continue to try to push those boundaries. And I just encourage people to do it because it does grow us. And it sounds like, boy, another thing to do, as if we don't have enough to do. But it really does, I believe, help with that hope question that you asked about. And it really does benefit the young people in our lives.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much because I feel like I came in today like very nervous about what's been going on in our country and for my own children, but I feel like you've given me so many great ideas and tips and things to think about. So thank you so much for your time, John. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. This is the first interview that I'm doing about the course.
Yes. Yay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a few friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join our Facebook group or find us on Instagram to discuss episodes. All links are on our website, www.happyasianwoman.com. Talk soon.